This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
And this afternoon, we get a really distinct privilege to talk with Karim El Badri, a scientist from Roseburg who yesterday received a 2025 MacArthur Fellowship, an unrestricted $800,000 grant from that foundation, recognizing his extraordinary creativity and impact. He is joining us from Southern California, where he's an assistant professor. And Karim, thanks for being on with us this afternoon.
Hi, Kyle. Good to hear you. Good to be here.
So, in this business, I mean, I get like 200 emails a day and things come across, and many of them are routine. Yesterday at 11:06, I get this email that says, scientist from Roseburg wins this big honor. And first of all, there are not a lot of scientists from Roseburg, period. And then when I realized who it was, and I've seen some of your work before, other things that you've been noted for, I thought, gosh, we have got to get this guy on the radio. So I appreciate you doing this. Talk about, first of all, let me mention what you're doing right now. You are teaching astronomy, right? Tell us about that.
That's right. So I'm a professor at Caltech in Pasadena, just outside of L.A., and my job is some teaching classes and then some doing research, probably a bit more research than teaching. So I have a group with graduate students and postdocs, and we work on lots of different problems about how stars evolve and black holes form and what's out there in the galaxy. And then in addition, I teach classes to undergrads here and to grad students, ranging from kind of intro to astronomy to more advanced topics.
So when did your interest in science begin?
Pretty early already. When I was 5 or so, I got the Guinness World Records and some books like that, and I decided I wanted to be an astronaut. And then pretty much all through childhood, I was interested in things related to space. At some point, I found out if I wanted to be an astronaut, I'd probably have to go into the military, which I didn't really want to do. But I've been interested in things in space and stars and planets and things like that pretty much as long as I can remember.
So what led to wanting to be an astrophysicist? I mean, frankly, most people can't even spell the word.
Yeah. So I first seriously got interested in astronomy and physics in college. I wasn't originally planning on majoring in sciences even, but I took an introductory course just to satisfy one of these distributional requirements, and it turned out to be really amazing. I really liked how many basic questions about the universe were still open, and how much our understanding about astronomy has evolved just in the last several decades. And it seemed like every few years there was a new big discovery from a new mission that was shining a light on a new part of the universe, and I wanted to be part of that. I also learned that, I mentioned I wanted to be an astronaut originally, but most of the objects I wanted to study in space, like other stars and black holes, are so far away that even if you go to space, you're not really significantly closer to them. And so instead, if you want to learn about them, you have to use telescopes where you can see, hundreds or thousands of light years away.
You've got to have an intense curiosity about our world.
Yeah, I definitely like to try to understand how things work. One of the cool things in astronomy is, we get all this data that shows how stars and planets and galaxies and things like that look at a certain time, but we hardly ever see things evolve. And so we have to come up with a story for how one observation is related to another. And often there are many different possible stories that can all try to explain different sets of data. And it's only as we get more data that we can try to distinguish between them.
Now, a lot of people, and maybe this is, in the industrialized world, even a smaller city, smaller community like Roseburg, a lot of people, I've been told, really don't even take time to even look up into the sky, and I bet that's something you do a lot of.
I do when I can. Unfortunately, in Pasadena, California, it's hard to see too much of the sky. We have a lot of light pollution here. But I do try to get out to observatories when I can, and also just into nature and national parks and stuff like that to see a good night sky. Yeah.
So when you headed off to college, when you left Roseburg, did you have a different career in mind?
Yeah, I wasn't totally sure what I wanted to do. In high school, I did a lot of stuff that kind of made me think I thought I wanted to be a lawyer or do something in that direction. And then I went to college, and I pretty quickly realized that wasn't for me. And then I tried some philosophy and some math and physics. And eventually I did a research project in astronomy over the summer, and I really liked that and haven't turned back since then.
Well, yeah, you haven't turned back is like an understatement. I did a quick search yesterday, just the number of articles about, first of all, the number of articles you've published in a number of well-known scientific journals, but also articles about you and your work. So as you got through your first part of college, talk about kind of the progression going on to get your PhD, et cetera.
Yeah, so I went to college at Yale. And I think my second year there, decided I wanted to do physics and then astronomy. And so I did a few research projects with different faculty there, some in the summer, some during the year. Actually, in 2015, so that was my junior year of college, I did like a summer internship in research at Caltech, where the professor who's still here now working in his lab. And there I started working on some galaxy formation simulations. And I really liked that. That was pretty theoretical work, you know, looking at how galaxies evolve inside a box that represents a simulated part of the universe. And so then I applied to keep doing that kind of research in my PhD. And so I went to UC Berkeley in the Bay Area, and I was working on that for the first 2 or 3 years of my PhD. But then a couple of years into my PhD, there was this big data release from a mission called Gaia that was just a whole new kind of data to study stars and interacting stars and binary stars in the Milky Way. And I just started playing with it a little bit. I went to some kind of hackathon-style meetings to see what the data was like. And it was really amazing. I realized pretty quickly it would be transformative for a lot of questions in astronomy. And so then I started working more on that, more on, first of all, smaller scales, stars rather than galaxies, and more observational, you know, using telescopes and real data than theoretical. And then I've pretty much been doing that kind of research ever since. So that's like the last 6 years or so. But I try to always keep learning new things and, you know, expand to new areas. So I finished my PhD in 2021. And then I went to Harvard for a couple of years doing what's called a postdoc there. It's kind of like more independent research, building on what I did in my PhD. And then about 2 years ago in 2023, I moved to Caltech for the job I have now, which is basically leading a research group and teaching astronomy.
Wow. So the students you are teaching, what's the age range?
So it ranges. I've had some classes that are basically first-year college students, so they're mostly like 18 or so. And then I teach some classes for graduate students, so they're usually 5 or 6 years older, maybe 24, 25. And then, well, actually, maybe a bit younger than that, maybe 23, 22. And then, you know, we have postdocs, which are people who have already finished grad school and are still doing research, so they're a few years older.
And why do you think it is important for us to learn more about this area of science?
You know, I just mostly am a curious person. I want to understand how the universe works. And almost everything we do in our lives is kind of focused on a tiny little patch of the universe that we happen to live in. But there's so much more out there and so much more that we don't understand. And for me, it's mostly just about curiosity. You know, learning how we can make sense of complicated observations with simple physics and make predictions that will accurately tell us what's going to happen in the future. There's also some technological spinoffs. Like, a lot of times doing basic research in astronomy has led to some innovations that are also useful in industry. Like, for example, the detectors that we use in our telescopes are the same kind of detectors that are now used in people's iPhones to take pictures. But it's always hard to predict what spinoffs are actually going to be useful. And so I think it's important to do kind of just basic curiosity-driven research.
Now, what was the process that led to winning this MacArthur Fellowship?
Yeah, I mean, I don't actually know the full process. They're a little bit secretive about it. But from my perspective, I was having breakfast one morning at like 7 a.m. getting ready for work, and I got a call from an unknown number. And they said, "We're the MacArthur Foundation." And right away, I was like, "Oh, are you asking for money? What is this?" And I talked to them for a few minutes, and they said, "No, actually, we're not asking for money." And then I thought, you know, this is probably a scam, because why would they be contacting me? But then they read me this fairly long bio that was kind of about my research and career and what I work on. And it was technical enough that I figured if it was a scam, they were really dedicated to it, but more likely it was real. So I really don't know what happened until I got the award. You know, somebody nominates you, and I have some ideas of who that might have been, but they don't tell you. And then the foundation reaches out to other people in the field that can assess your work, and they can, you know, recommend whether they think it's sufficiently creative or not, and then they tell you. But apparently it's a fairly long process. You know, they think about it for a year or something like that, and I only found out at the very end.
Wow. And as I was looking at the website for the MacArthur Foundation yesterday, 22 people named MacArthur Fellows for this year. It's not all related to science, related to a lot of different things.
That's right. I think only a minority of them are scientists. So there's some people doing all different kinds of art and literature and poetry. Somebody doing indigenous basket making, all kinds of things.
And they've been doing this for over 40 years, looks like about 44 years now. And when you found out you had won this and the idea of an $800,000 no strings fellowship, what does that do for your mind?
I feel very lucky. My guess is as good as anyone else's why they chose me for this. But I guess I think the main purpose of these kind of awards is to get the public excited about science or art or other areas, and expose them to fields that they otherwise wouldn't have learned about because they read that somebody got an award in it. And so I hope that my getting it, and, you know, they've made some videos about me talking about astronomy and stuff, will make some people learn about astronomy that otherwise wouldn't have learned about it.
And the MacArthur Fellowship website, a lot of information out there about it. Just have had a glance to look at a little bit, but if people are interested in this conversation, they could certainly go there and find out more about what's going on. Now, they put out the announcement yesterday. How long have you known that you were the a winner?
About a month. I think it was in early September they contacted me. And then they want to make all these promotional materials, like the video and pictures and stuff. So they sent a photographer and a filming crew to Caltech campus at some point, and they recorded that video with me and also recorded some stuff with my students. But I wasn't allowed to tell anyone what it was, so I just told people there's these people that are filming something to get they're making a film to get people excited about science, which I think is technically true.
So any idea at this point? I mean, I know that I imagine, I don't, believe me, science is my weak spot. I'll just tell you that right there. I did pretty good in school, but science was the place that I struggled a bit. Talk about, doing research can be very costly. It can require specialized equipment, things like that. Do you have any idea? Are you still kind of formulating? It's a long-term thing here, what you can do with this.
Yeah, I don't have any really concrete plans so far. It's true, lots of science is expensive. In astronomy, basically the main expenses are building instruments to go on telescopes and then hiring people to analyze the data. Usually for those kinds of things, we get money from the university or from the NSF, the National Science Foundation, or you know, other federal grants like that. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping it'll give me the opportunity to do something more creative that I wouldn't have done otherwise.
What is an average day for you like?
I think one of the cool things about being an academic is most days are different. You know, in principle, every day I can wake up and decide what I'm going to think about that day. In practice, there's, you know, some things I have to do regularly. So about half the time I'm teaching, like about half of the year I'll be teaching a class. And so when I'm teaching, I do that for an hour and a half a day or so, and then I spend another couple hours preparing a lecture. Other than that, you know, sometimes in the morning I'll have data that was taken the night before at a telescope, so I'll reduce that data and start analyzing it. And then I'll have meetings with students or collaborators to talk about progress that they made recently and next steps in their research. Sometimes I travel to conferences to present results from the last year or two. Sometimes doing science outreach to try to tell the public about what we've been up to. So lots of exciting variety.
Now, you have lived in Roseburg for a number of years, but if I recall from what I know from earlier, you came to the area, I mean, you weren't born in Roseburg, right?
I actually was born in Roseburg, yeah.
Okay. So what do you think about your time in Roseburg? How did that impact these choices you've made and clearly the mark you're making in the scientific world?
Yeah, I mean, I had a great childhood in the area. I grew up outside of town, maybe 20 miles or so from Roseburg in a pretty dark area. So growing up, you know, I always had almost complete darkness. And I, my parents and I, when there was a meteor shower, we'd go out and camp out in the open under the stars and watch meteors. And my dad would walk around and point out to me which stars were which and things like that. So that definitely helped get me excited about astronomy in the first place. And then I just had several excellent math and science teachers in high school who really got me interested in science and excited about science and math, kind of teaching me to teach math and science like an adventure, not just a set of things to memorize from books. And that excitement about discovery and learning new things really has stayed with me throughout my career.
Any of those teachers particularly stand out in particular to you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of great ones. I think maybe the most relevant for what I ended up doing now is someone named Don Crossfield, who taught for calculus and other math classes at Roseburg for, I don't know, maybe 30 years. He's retired now, but I'm sure lots of people in my generation will have taken math classes for him.
And he's one of those that's super well known for his impact in the area. So, what about your future? I mean, you're only 31 now, and you've achieved things that a lot of people don't achieve in their entire life. What's ahead for you?
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I mean, I'm definitely excited about doing more astronomy. So, one of the main things I work on now is looking for black holes. And so, a couple of years ago, my team and I found the nearest black hole to Earth, which is about 1,500 light years away. But actually, we think there's about a million other black holes that are closer to us than that one. It's just most of them are hard to find. All of them are hard to find. And so with current methods, we only find about one in a million. But I'm working on ways to find some of the other ones as well and understand the population better.
In the sort of the economic times when things are a little tough, does science too often get pushed off to the side?
You know, it depends. I think it's good that there are organizations like MacArthur that make sure that there's some funding for science, even when it's not a federal priority. So I think it's really important that it not be pushed to the side. There definitely are almost always some people arguing that we shouldn't give any money to science because we've got to spend it on, things that have more importance on people's day-to-day lives. But I think that's can be a pretty short-sighted point of view, and really will prevent you from making long-term progress and better understanding the universe as a species. And so hopefully it doesn't get pushed to the side too much.
With how much you're immersed in science and being an astrophysicist, do you have any totally unrelated hobbies or things you like to do?
I really like the outdoors. So I go running pretty much every day, and I like cycling. I play chess just for fun. I guess in the last few years, astronomy has taken up more and more of my time, so I kind of have to fight myself to have time for hobbies and stuff. But those are some of them.
Well, pretty outstanding achievement. Kareem El-Badri, astrophysicist, assistant professor of astronomy at the California Institute for Technology, and now a 2025 MacArthur Fellowship winner, getting an unrestricted $800,000 grant from the foundation. And Kareem, we appreciate your time this afternoon, and we'll look forward to seeing more of what happens as your career rolls on.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Kareem El-Badri joining us from Southern California. The interview will be a podcast at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio. Make that 1256 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.